the more you consistently invest in something, the more money you're going to make at the end. In real estate, it's not only the location that's giving you the benefit, but it's the improvements you make in the property, the value of the property, and basically the quality of your operations.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon. And today we've got Tudor Francu on the pod. He came to this country from Romania in 1995 to pursue his passion and wanted to be a doctor, became a medical doctor and anesthesiologist, then started his investing career in real estate in single family, got up to 30 single family units before transitioning out of those and into multifamily, started his multifamily journey as a limited partner before moving over to the general partnership side. So we talk a lot about kind of that transition from single family to multifamily. We talk a lot about kind of what's going on in the market today on the multifamily side. And we talk about kind of what his vision is or thoughts are for 2024 and into 25. So let's get Tudor on the pod. All right, Tudor, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on.
Hey, Justin. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being here. Let's kind of jump right in. Maybe give us a quick overview of kind of who you are, where you are, and what you're up to.
Sure. So my name is Tudor Francu. I'm a medical doctor. I'm an anesthesiologist. I live around Baltimore, Maryland. And other than practicing medicine, I'm heavily involved in real estate and have several other hobbies too.
Got it. So I always like to kind of know or learn kind of a person's origin story. So obviously, I'm assuming you started your life as a doctor. That was kind of your goal. And then real estate was kind of a secondary thing or something that came later on in life. Is that kind of fair?
Yes. Actually, I'm an immigrant. I came in the United States from Romania in 1995. So about 20 something years ago, and started from scratch. I had nothing, knew nobody, had no connections. Barely know how to speak the language and just coming into a new territory with starting a new life. I had my medical degree. I was looking for some jobs to kind of patch things up and start my medical career, and finally got a residency position, got my anesthesiology career going. And after I found a good job, I started investing in real estate with all savings that I had. It was kind of a old culture, I think, in my head, idea that I have to invest all my savings into real estate because that's what my grandfather taught me and all the Romanian old guys did back in the days. They didn't have any other ways of investing, so to speak. At that time, all we had was land, buildings, coins, gold, and silver, pretty much it. So I kind of old school type of guy coming into the United States, and that's what I started investing in. And it's unbelievable how these things actually work over time. So you look 30 years past this thing, and here I am. I have a pretty extensive multifamily portfolio right now with several general partnerships I'm involved in and multiple limited partnerships. Had a portfolio of almost 30 single family homes at one time that I converted basically and sell them and converted to multifamily just because I wanted to scale at a faster level and didn't have much time because I started my life at 28 years old, basically.
So that's interesting. So you kind of grew up, and I'm learning things every day on this podcast. So the Romanian kind of culture back in the day was make money, but invest it in real estate as much as possible. Is that kind of the thought process?
Yeah. There was no stock market. We were a communist country, a lot of wars involved in. People didn't have trust in anything other than material things. So you could see people buying a lot of land when they had the opportunity, participating in like small businesses and small enterprises, or just buy buildings and coins and gold and silver. That was pretty much the basic of investing, so to speak. Right.
Yeah. Interesting. And so once you got your career off the ground here, Where did your real estate journey start and how did you start it? Like, were you in Baltimore? Were you kind of there the whole time?
No, we arrived in New York and stayed there for a few years and then moved down south in Maryland just because I got a good job and I liked the area better than the New York area, starting a family and stuff. But you asked me, how do I start in real estate? I think there is only one answer here for everybody. You start buying and investing in real estate, small amounts of money, and get your first two-bedroom, one-bath house that purchase cash and start renting it. And like Robert Kiyosaki said, even that $50 a month cash flow that you put in your pocket, you can build on. And it's a small snow globe, right? The year passed and that snow globe becomes bigger and you roll over profits into a different property. You exchange it. You start buying better and bigger stuff in better locations. And 10 years later, 15 years later, you find out that you have multiple properties. You have a decent cash flow in your pocket out of those rents. And that's how you build a portfolio. And you just have to figure out how you can scale at the rate that you're comfortable with, buy in locations that you're very secure and you're comfortable with. And you just partner with people that you trust and you like. I think it's a very simple recipe. You just need to follow the things.
Yeah.
And you need to be consistent with what you're doing. Because like any other thing, weight loss, building muscle, I don't know, any other thing, you need to be consistent with what you're doing. It's not more of how you do it, but what you do every day.
Yeah. So you started out with single family. You're starting out, I guess, in Baltimore. Were you investing in Baltimore, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then at what point did you start to shift away from kind of the single family into the bigger stuff? Obviously, you started to trade up from one asset to the next asset and all of that. But did you get to the point where you were doing like big syndications, 100 plus unit apartment complexes?
Yeah. So at some point, I was reaching about 30 properties, single family homes in that area, and realized that not only a little difficult to start to manage them because they're in different locations. You have multiple tenants in one location or one tenant in one location. And as soon as that tenant moves out, you have 100% free house. Your occupancy drops to zero.
Right.
And there's no cash flow. And you have to turn on all the renovations and preparing for the next tenant and so forth. And it's a lot of time and a lot of money wasted on that turn. So years passed and you're happy with your cash flow, whatever it is. And then you think, okay, what's next? What am I trying to do with this thing? Like, what's the final goal that I have? And I realized that not only it's slow to achieve what I wanted to achieve in terms of a monthly income or a secure income from them. And I converted basically that portfolio into a multifamily syndications. And you start small, you start again from the beginning, like the same recipe, being a limited partner in some deals with people that you trust and like and in good locations. And you build up on that. And all of a sudden, you become a general partner in some of the deals and so forth. And it's the same game, play at a different scale. There's no rocket science in this. It's a recipe that needs to be multiplied every day in the same manner. And yeah, it's a much faster game with multifamily than I experienced with single family homes.
So with the multifamily, as you made that transition, did you completely shift away from single family and kind of leave that behind and say, okay, I'm taking these 30, converting them, and then I'm going to take that and push it all into multifamily and forget single family ever existed? Because it can be, I didn't go single family route because I didn't like the one tenant, one occupant, 100% or 0% occupancy. That was always too nerve-wracking. So we started with a duplex. But anyway, my question, did you kind of just shift 100% of your focus to multifamily?
Yes, I did. Once I got rid of the single family homes, I just kept two small apartment buildings that I still have just because I think they have very good return on the money. And I completely focus on multifamily syndications. And right now I'm basically running as a general partner on 5 deals. I have probably, about 12 to 13 limited partnerships in other deals. And you get to know the business much better being in both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. I want to talk about the transition from LP to GP, because I think some people listening to this, and that's kind of how we started our journey into multifamily, was let's test it out with our own money, learn the business and learn how it works from the limited partner side, and then shift to the GP side. But before we kind of make that transition, let's take a quick sponsor break and we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Tudor. And before the break, we were talking about kind of you left single family in the dust, you'd been there, done that, and now you're kind of fully into the dark side of multifamily. And you started out investing more as an LP, so investing with your own money, and you're kind of passively investing with operators. I'm very curious, we're recording this in late February 24. Multifamily has gone through a lot of turmoil over the last few years. And I can speak for myself and a lot of people that I know that choosing the right operator, the right person to invest with, is just as important, if not more important, than the actual physical property itself. So single family can be a one-person game, right? You can do it yourself. Multifamily is different. You need teams, you need people, you need a lot of capital. And so how did you take that plunge, that first check, and say, here's my money, go do with it, and hopefully it comes back with friends? How did you kind of start that process and get comfortable?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's several things here that needs to be said. First of all, my first investments as a limited partner in multifamily syndications were made not for the obvious reasons to make money, like a normal limited partner would do. I wanted to get into the game with some operators that I knew and I liked and I trust, just because I wanted them to spill the beans to me. Because I envision myself as a general partner years after that. So I wanted to get into the game and know the game and know how the game is played. And there's something to be said here, because you need to associate yourself with better people than you. So I've done this in single family home. I manage properties like that in single family. I acquire them. I deal with tenants and all this stuff, but I didn't know how exactly that's going to be related to a multifamily deal. And I wanted them to show me what is the difference here and get into their modus operandi with the multifamily deal. And that happened, actually. Participate in property management calls, start with visiting the property and deal at that scale with something that you already know how to do in single family. And little by little, you get the hang of it and realize that in a multifamily syndication deal, when you run an apartment building for 100 or 200 units, it's nothing different than a small apartment building or a duplex or even a single family homes. It's just a matter of how far can you think you can do things and how big you can imagine your goals. And that's what the evolution and the change was for me. Like, how can I accomplish in my head running one single family home versus running an apartment building of 200 units? And it's a matter of sky is the limit here, because the recipe is the same again. You just need to extrapolate the same principles to multiple units. And the second thing I wanted to say is, as a limited partner, you don't have a lot of access usually to the managing part of a multifamily building, because things are done by the operators, the general partners, and they have team in place and procedures and protocols of how things are done to be more efficient. But if you want, and if you get involved in those things, they are happy to help you. One of the major differences that I encounter in my real estate career is that dealing with single family operators and owners, it was so much different than dealing with multifamily operators and syndicators. In multifamily, I found my personal experience was that everybody helps each other. Nobody is like, oh, I don't want to tell you how I do things because you're going to buy next to me and you're going to be more successful. You're going to have more cash flow than me in a single family home. No, everybody helps each other. We have groups, we have meetings, we have conferences. We know and exchange information about our procedures and our protocols. It's a much fluid, I would say, environment than in a single family environment. And that's what I liked after I got into it. And the progression to being a general partner was so much easier after I contacted a couple of teams. I was limited partner in their deals and learned from them. And I was confident at that point that I can take on my own deal. And I'm on my fifth one now.
And I'm assuming you've been a doctor the entire time. And so how do you have the time to manage? I mean, I don't even want to think about how to try to manage 30 single family houses as a full-time job. That would be a nightmare. But how have you been able to manage kind of the, you know, your full-time day job plus being a GP? Because I've been a GP in deals, and I know other people that are GPs, and sometimes those are full-time jobs, even though they're not supposed to be, right? Especially if deals are not going as well as they should. So how have you kind of handled that? Because that's always like a conversation in somebody's head when they think about taking the plunge of just being a limited partner, because you can just sit back and say, you guys deal with all the stuff. I don't really care as long as my money comes back with friends. Whereas you're the one that's trying to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great responsibility to be a general partner from multiple points of view. But yeah, to answer your question, my medical career was going well, and I was trying to transition at some point from having just a W-2 job to being an owner of the medical group. So I created that environment for myself. I was able to detach myself a little bit from practicing and more managing the group.
Okay.
And I still practice right now, and I love it. And, you know, it's my job. I like to do it. But my focus is on real estate for many, many years now. And I was able to balance these two things pretty well so far. But it's a thing that most people don't realize. We all have 24 hours in a day, right? And it's just a matter of how you organize, you structure your time, how you use your time, and how to make the most out of it. So it takes a lot of planning. It takes a lot of goal setting and writing and preparing for this. It's not an easy job to be in medical profession and also in real estate general partnership. But also in general partnership, as you know, in multifamily, we all have different roles in our team. So being a general partner doesn't mean that you run everything on that building. Some people are involved with the property management, company relationships, investor relationships, legal stuff, capital raising, all kinds of small things that can be done. And usually in a syndication like that, there are several general partners in the team, like, you know, four or five, whatever they are, but each one has a role, very definite role. And one aspect that I liked also in multifamily, that you don't have to do it all yourself, like I used to do it in single family. You delegate stuff. Everybody has different strengths and relationships and is good at something. So you capitalize on everybody else's resources and expertise.
Yeah. I was going to ask the question because to your point, multifamily is a team sport and there are a lot of different jobs, so to speak, within a general partnership syndication. Where do you focus your efforts? Are you finding deals? Are you capital raising? Like, where do you kind of flex your muscles and share your expertise there?
Yes, I try to focus right now in having a good role in investor relationships in the teams, capital raising also, and try to connect people that I know in the business, referring legal people and teams and firms to the right syndicators, trying to connect different parts of the puzzle in that deal. And the managing role is more given to someone who has an overview of the deal. The people who find the deal are usually the ones that are bringing it home, so to speak, and make it a syndication and close it and make money with it. But I am in a position right now that I don't want necessarily to find deals. I want to trust somebody who does this all the time and in the areas that I'd like to invest in. As I said, I'm in Maryland. My focus right now is in the south part of the country, in Texas mainly. And I want to leverage people that are there already and they know the market, and I learn the market also. So that's where I come in, as basically bringing the capital, bringing the investors, rallying everybody, keeping everybody informed and communicating well with the whole team.
That's it. I was going to ask the question about where are you focused from an investment standpoint. So it sounds like you have a few operators, deal finders that you know, like, and trust in certain parts of the country. And so you are kind of their part of their team, if you will. So if they have a deal or are going to get a deal, they would reach out to you and say, hey, here's the deal, here's a property, here's why we like it. Do you think your investors would be interested in this? And then you would obviously have to vet the deal yourself to make sure that you trust the numbers and all that fun stuff. How long have you been doing, I forgot to ask the transition question around timing, but how long have you been in the multifamily space?
About 5 years now.
Okay. So you got in before COVID, before the peak, and then rode through the crap that we've been going through over the last few years. So obviously Texas is a market. What parts of Texas? I live in Austin, obviously. That's an interesting but very competitive market in itself. Yes. What other areas do you like in Texas?
I'm mainly focusing on Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston.
Got it. Yeah. Houston's had some crazy insurance increases over the last year. But yeah, I have some friends that live in Houston, and that's, it's crazy what they've been hit with. So
yeah, it's crazy. Not been easy lately, especially the past few years where they experienced all this drama with interest rates and bridge loans and a lot of insurance increases, obviously, in some areas. But you need to think long-term here. The multifamily is not a get-rich-fast game. It's something that you put your money in and you wait at least 5 to 7 years. You mainly count on appreciation, and especially in those areas. And the cash flow is a bonus. And I always say to all my investors, this is a brick-and-mortar deal. You invest in something that is not going to go away. It's not going to be demolished. It's not going to get confiscated by the government or anything like that. It's a long-term game, and it's a secure game, and no matter how you look at it. Yes, people can lose money in it, like in any other investment. And compared to stock market, I don't even want to go there, because a lot of people lost their pension plans and all the stuff in stock market over the years. So I would say overall, there's no ideal investment. But there is more secure investments in this world, and real estate is one of them.
Yeah. What's your strategy? Is it a traditional kind of value add, buy a BC class asset, bring it up to the next level? Have you used variable rate debt, like for bridge loans and things like that?
Yeah. So I like to invest mainly in value add deals, just because you get the feeling that you improve a lot of life conditions in that community. And from the ethical point of view, I think I'd like to see that most of the time. I like to see people and communities being taken advantage of the improvement that we make in the buildings and in the properties. Obviously, that will come with an increase in rent most of the time, but people are happier. They're more willing to give you a bump increase in rent if they have more amenities, or the paint is fresh, they have a playground, they have a pet place, you know, all this stuff. I mean, it's just a different game than buying a Class A where you can capitalize on rents right away. Also, I think you're mentioning the bridge loans and stuff. You need to adjust. You need to be flexible on where the market is. Everybody's blaming now that people were taking on flexible loans and variable rate loans a few years back. But that's how the game was then. there are not too many choices to buy a property other than a bridge loan.
Right.
Most people did it, obviously blind, without calculating stuff. And now they're in a worse position than they were before. But overall, I think you need to see where the market goes. And obviously, you cannot be a general partner without putting your money in the deal, first of all, and having money available to rescue something if something goes wrong in a property. And that's what I believe, that being a general partner is a great responsibility. It's not about making more money. It's about making more people happy and gaining that trust from your investors that you're doing the right thing. I don't like to go back to my investors and ask for more money. There might be the case in some properties, but unless I extinguish every single effort that I can make as a general partner with my money and our money as a team before going back to them. But overall, the goal here is to save and make that property profitable at the end. And as I said, real estate is an investment that's mainly secure. At some point, you can hold your money and you can make a profit if you hold a property long enough.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes more time than what you thought, right? People were buying deals in 2019 and 2020 and flipping them a year later and making crazy amounts of money. And that was, fortunately for them, that was possible. And then 2021 and 22 happened. And now people are like, well, crap, I can't flip it in 2 years. I may have to hold it for the 5 or 7 or even longer. You got to ride the wave, right? You got to, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And you got to just keep a hold of your board and hopefully you don't get knocked off, essentially. So,
exactly. There was a time, remember, a couple of years back where I was looking at the market and people selling properties after 2 years. And I was like, this is like fix and flip in multifamily.
Yeah.
It's not normal.
They just bought it, put some paint on it, and then sold it for twice as much. And it was like,
exactly. Yeah. That's not investing. That's fix and flip and making a quick buck very quickly.
Well, it was also perfect timing by them, right? The person that bought it and flipped it. Like, again, if they bought again 2 years later, they couldn't do the same thing because of interest rates going through the roof. So we talked a little about Texas. What other markets are you targeting or looking at?
Yeah, one of the other markets I'm looking at, and there recently, it's been a very good progress on that, is Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, and this part of the East Coast that is taking advantage of the migration from the Northeast, so to speak, for different reasons, tax reasons, jobs, quality of living, and all the stuff. Florida also. So these are some markets that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. So you've been in the game through the last, or as we're going through this cycle, has your investment philosophy or return profile or risk profile, I guess, changed knowing what we've been through the last 18 months, 2 years, and knowing that, you know, 2024 isn't going to go the opposite direction and go really great. It's probably going to be another rough year, 25, who the heck knows what's going to happen. So has your thought process changed as you look at deals this year?
Yes. Interesting question. I think 2024 will be a survival year. And probably 2025 is going to be a consequence of many things that people are going to do in 2024 to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And also a consequence of what the elections are going to bring this year. In terms of philosophy of investing, I think the principles are still there for me. I don't want to budge on them. You buy in a very good location. You buy with a known and trusted team that has a track record, and you buy with knowing that you might have to put more money into that deal. Mm. In other words, you buy only when you have enough money that you can potentially put in the deal and in a good location with a good team.
Yeah.
In terms of changing the investment principles, I would think, like in stock market, like any other investment, it's the compound effect, right? The more you consistently invest in something, the more money you're going to make at the end.
Yeah.
Because in real estate, it's not only the location that's giving you the benefit at the end, but it's the improvements you make in the property. It's the NOI that you increase in a multifamily, the value of the property, and basically the quality of your operations. And that's what I think one of the main issues this year and next year is going to be: who can operate the property better?
With what they have. Finish your thought. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, with what they have, not necessarily, you know, making a lot of improvements or putting a lot of capex in them, but just try to maximize your operations with what the property has already and what your human resources are, material resources are, and make the most out of it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I'm realizing as hindsight being 2020 is the most important person or people on the team are the asset managers who are actually responsible for the post-close execution of the business plan, right? Because everything that we build in the syndication world is on Excel, right? Everything is just numbers and everything looks perfect and you can make everything look perfect. But then once you get the deal done, now it's time to actually execute. And we're asking on-site property managers making $40,000, $50,000 a year operating $10, $20, $30 million businesses, right? Because that's exactly what they are. And so you need people that are making sure that they're doing what they need to do, because typically the property management teams are not invested in the deal, right? That's their job, is to be on site. And so we need to make sure that people are moving in the right direction. They're doing the renovations when necessary. They're pushing rents as far as they can, et cetera, et cetera. So as I'm looking at, I'm kind of doing what you did, was find partners that are fully into this to invest with and partner with. And one of the main questions I ask is about their asset management function, if it's integrated into the business or how it works, because that's
exactly like you said, you cannot put a person who has minimal education and expertise in real estate off his job for $50,000 a year to run a multifamily, multi-million dollar deal for you and be profitable. You need someone who can be involved there every day from your team.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'm looking at too, with teams that are integrated in that property management component of the deal very well. They know they're local, they know the people, they can go there every day if needed. And yes, of course, you need someone there hired every day on site, but
yeah,
that person needs to be play a little chess with.
Yeah, you need to be accountable to somebody else. You have to.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So I guess, is your outlook for 24 kind of just survive until 25? And if a great deal comes across your plate, you'll jump at it, but it has to be super, super good, I would have to imagine.
Yeah, the same thing I said last year. I said, let me stand back a little bit, see how the market goes. And I closed two or three deals last year. I was like thinking, how is that possible? But there were good deals, there were sound deals, sound numbers, and they made sense. I don't know what's going to happen in 24. Nobody knows. Everybody's assuming the rates are going to go down. We don't know that. Everybody's banking on that. Again, we don't know that. So I think it's a matter of how much capital you have in case something happens. If the rates go down and things are improving from that point of view, very good. But it might not. Or it might not now. It might improve next year. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I'm very cautious right now with what kind of deals are going through. I think, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of market turmoil in terms of buying and selling. There are a lot of properties out there that are in distress right now, and they're going to come on the market with a very discounted price, and people are going to jump on them. But that is not necessarily, I would say, a sound thing to do, just because you can get a loan right now on a discounted price on a fixed agency loan for, I don't know, 5-6% a year if the rates go down. Because if the rates go down in 25, you might get a loan from the agency for even less purchase price, for maybe 3-4%.
Yeah.
So even the notion that we can get very good agency loans right now, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, I was at a conference in Houston a couple weeks ago, and my wife went with me and we walked into the first session and I say, I guarantee that everybody in here is talking about now is the perfect time to buy. And literally we walked in and the speaker was like, now is the perfect time to buy and I'll show you why. And I was just like, you're at a multifamily conference. They're not going to be like doom and gloom. But yeah, it was just fascinating to kind of hear everybody talking, and everybody was talking like it was probably 2010, where it was like, oh, great. 09, 10, 8 is done. Back to normal. Let's start buying things again and not worrying about the money they may have lost, investors and all that. So,
yeah, exactly.
So this has been a great conversation because I could keep going on for hours and hours here, but I want to kind of transition to the final three pack of questions I ask every guest. So first question is, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
Start as soon as you can. Don't wait.
Yeah.
I was in a position in the beginning of my medical career. I started saving some money and I had the opportunity of catching, so to speak, Robert Kiyosaki in his early days of seminars and talks and all this stuff. And I was like, wait a second. So we're not okay for saving money. We need to invest them. Again, I'm a 28-year-old coming in the United States with nothing, have no financial education. And I hear this guy saying, invest your money.
Yeah.
And that's how I started. But you need to start investing as soon as you can. As soon as you have a job, as soon as you can save some money anywhere, stock market, real estate, everything that you want to invest in or you like, it doesn't matter. But the sooner the game starts, the better it's going to be at the end.
Yeah, I definitely wish I would have read Rich Dad Poor Dad about 10 years before I did, but it is what it is. You can't start any sooner than today. And so today is the best day to start, right? So
exactly.
Second question is, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Oh, okay. So I think real estate book, my Bible, so to speak, in real estate was Guide to Investing by Robert Kiyosaki. I think it's his second book after Rich Dad Poor Dad. It goes in a little bit more detail and describes the actual principles of how you do things. That was a very transformational book for me. In terms of business books, I think what I like is I like Hardy's book, Compound Effect, which is another principle that I go by. And it describes a lot of methods how you can multiply your investments by just thinking of how you can compound your interest.
Yeah, I haven't heard that last one. I've read the other one by Robert Kiyosaki, but I haven't read The Compound Effect.
Yeah, those two are mainly the things that I'm thinking right now.
Got it. I like it. All right, last question is, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life off of your passive income, what would you do?
In terms of number?
No, what would you do if you could live an amazing life just off of your passive income?
Oh,
so you
I
have
see.
All the money you need off of your investments. What would you do if you did that?
Yeah, I wouldn't change much. I can tell you that. I think I've come to a place in my life right now that I do pretty much what I like and when I like it. I think it's a matter of mental sanity for me to keep working and keep having a project in my mind and work towards it and have a goal. In different aspects of my life, I have a lot of hobbies. I want to dedicate time to expand those hobbies and make them better, have fun in the process, and look at work as a more of a pleasure than a duty.
And work. Yeah. No, I like it. It makes a lot of sense. A lot of people that I have on here, when I ask that question, they say it very similar, wouldn't change much. I'm doing what I love and all that. Once you find kind of your passion and what you're really put on this earth floor, it doesn't feel like work, so to speak. So,
yeah. No.
So if people want to learn more about you and what you're up to and maybe get involved in deals that you're looking at, what's the best way to reach you?
Yeah. So they can find me on social media pretty easily. My real estate company is called Stellar Multifamily Enterprise. It's our website is pretty known and we have a lot of resources and information on it, stellarmultifamily.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on all the other handles for social media, and anybody can access me to get an advice or an opinion or anything that's interesting in real estate.
Very cool. Well, Tudor, thank you, man. I really appreciate the time. It's been great to hear your story and meet you, and hopefully our paths will cross soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Justin. Appreciate your invitation.
Yep.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.